Welcome to Season 1 of Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with disability leaders each week about career, life, and technology. I'm Nikki Nolan.
And I'm Sam Prue.
Let's get started.
So to start, let's have you introduce yourself.
My name is Stephen Anfield. My pronouns are he, him. My title is kind of confusing. I'm changing careers at the moment. So I was in social and digital for over a decade, and now I'm going to grad school for social work. So the title is a little bit different. I'm a Black male with a shaved head, glasses, and hazel eyes. My background is a chair and a bar, kind of, not a drinking bar, plants. And I am wearing a hoodie, headphones, and glasses.
To get started, we would love to know a little bit about what your story is. What got you into your line of work or in your shift, it seems like?
Right. So I'll start with social and digital because it happened accidentally. I wanted to volunteer for older people because my grandmother at the time had passed away, and I saw how things had happened with her, and I was kind of angry and wanted to do something to fix things. And so I volunteered with AARP and ended up working there for a bit, and then met a client in New York who wanted me to help with social. And then I kind of just fell into it and then kept getting client after client after that. So that's where I started with social. I moved to DC after college at the University of Tennessee and served with City Year, which is an AmeriCorps program. And so going back into human services, so that's kind of a skip. So the 10 years of social and digital have been great, but I'm ready to go back into human services, which is why I'm going back into social work. And so part of that is because City Year has been like the kind of transformational thing that happened in my life, where I was serving in the DC community as a core member and in schools around kids, around teachers, and in classrooms. And that's where I am now. So I'm going back to school for that at the age of 41. So it's kind of cool.
Hey, you're never too old.
Right. Exactly.
That's really interesting. You're sort of doing this during, as we record, the time of COVID. Did that have any influence on the way you think about accessibility and inclusion and digital and all that stuff?
Yes. So a few months ago, I was just kind of in a place where I was like, you know what? I see a lot of things online where they're not accessible at all. I was reading about websites and what needs to be done with websites to make them more accessible. And so originally I had a website that I tried to code using a static site generator and worked with a developer kind of because I that's not my background. And so did that, learned about using alt text for images and how to communicate through social media. And something that I saw was how it's not used frequently. And so something that I've tried to do is be an example. I use it quite a bit. It's been my job, and it's been something that I try to bring to clients as well. And I think one thing as I go into social work is that is something I want to be able to impact for communities that may not be able to see or hear as part of my work. So yeah, definitely just seeing that more people are online and seeing where people don't have the access to get the information they need for, let's say, vaccines or a number of other things. And it's really, it needs to change. And we keep talking about it, but it feels like nothing is being done. And so I figure, hey, why not learn about it and make a few mistakes along the way and see what I can do to be part of the change?
Absolutely. It's a learning process. Right. You know.
So how do you go about strengthening communities through direct service connection and collaboration?
So City Year kind of taught me that. One of the things that we learned as core members is that we learned how to community map. And what that means is determining where resources are in the community so that you can connect those resources to the people that need them. And I don't think I really, at the time, I think I was 24. I don't think I really understood the impact of what I was doing at the moment. And it was just kind of like, I'm in a new city right now. I have no idea what's going on. I don't know how this is going to impact because you're jumping into something that's completely new. And now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can totally apply this to so many areas. And digitally, seeing where there are gaps that need to be filled has been kind of like a thing for me, and the community building part of it. I am someone who is not like, I need structure, but I will come up with ideas that are just completely out of the blue, like just, whoa, like what's going on? I remember a friend of mine who was creating her own nonprofit. Like, I came up with these wild ideas to get money for her nonprofit and was just doing different things mm-hmm. to connect communities. And so I see where people are being left out. And I'm like, what can I do to bring that community into the fold? Because their mm-hmm. opinion, their thoughts, their ideas are important. And one thing about City Year, which is really cool, is how they work with community leaders before they create a site in the city where they are thinking about going. It's not an approach of, we're going to go to this city and we're going to do this because it worked in this city. It's, we need to work with community leaders to figure out what the needs of that particular community are, what resources do they have or what resources are they lacking, and how can we be part of the change that will help the communities that are struggling the most.
How do you do data collection well? Because I think one of the things that happens when we're collecting data is people get left out at the data collection phase, and then they continue to be left out through the rest of the process. So like, how do you think about including the people that you don't even know about because they're already being left out in the ways that we collect data and we collect information?
Sure. So for me, I feel like my experiences have kind of, when I say my experiences, I've been all over the place. Literally, they've been all over the place. I intentionally, throughout my career, have, again, in City Year, we have these things called PITWs, which is putting idealism to work. And it's kind of like these ideas and quotes to live by. And one of them is, do 3 squishy things a day, which means putting yourself out of your comfort zone. Because if you're not doing that, then you're not learning, you're not growing. And a lot of that is, okay, so with older people, I'm definitely, at 24, I was definitely not older. But going into an organization where I'm working with older people, older volunteers, and hearing what they're going through, and, oh, Stephen, can you help me figure out how to do this certain thing? Or how do I access this on the internet? Or what is a browser? That was one question I had to answer. And I was like, I had no idea. That would be something I would need to answer. So it's a lot of, like, I might know this information, but going back a bit and being like, okay, I am someone who is 50 or 60. What could potentially be some of the things that I need help with that I don't know? And I think even with that, what I think about public benefits, I would help older people find public benefits like SNAP or food stamps and connecting them that way. So it's a lot of just thinking like, I've been in this situation or helping someone already. How can I apply that to a different situation that would help someone else? And then using that to then have data points and information to figure out what needs to be done.
And then the challenge becomes, how do we scale it, right?
Right.
From the one to the many without losing.
Correct. Absolutely.
So you sort of talked about this a tiny bit, and I hope you don't mind me asking. You have an invisible disability. I have an invisible disability. How has your experience with that sort of shaped your career trajectory or your experience in life? Like, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about that.
My ninth grade teacher was the first person, my ninth grade biology teacher, excuse me, was the first person who kind of brought it to my attention and didn't really pick up on anything until that period where she would see me get discouraged when I didn't come up with the same solution that everyone else did. And it was just like a moment where I was like, Stephen, you know what? Like, I see that you get discouraged when you are coming up with different solutions, but that is something that's going to help you later on in life. And didn't think anything of it until I had my first desk job where I had to sit at a computer for 8 hours. And I was like, this is not it. This is not working for me. Prior to that, I was doing very active things. Like, I was an orientation leader in college. I was a resident assistant. Those are things that don't really involve having to sit. And I need to be active. I need to be engaged all the time. And so I feel like that's been part of something that's been present in my trajectory. And it's kind of helped me think about, like, okay, when I go into something, there are certain characteristics that I need to be successful. And it's part of the reason why I'm going back into social work or health human services, is because I know that it's not something where it's going to be stagnant. There's always something going on. There's always someone needs to be helped. There's always a way that you can connect people to resources, and it's just very active. There are always problems that can be solved for people. And that's really helped me just kind of figure out who I am and what I'm about and moving forward in my career and life in general.
I was just chewing that over and sort of what you said about like finding alternative solutions, I think really fits. But one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is to interact better with people who find alternative solutions, we need to A, make society more flexible, and B, allow for alternative ways of interacting.
Correct.
And so what do you think needs to happen there? Because I think everybody wants to include people these days, but nobody seems to know, once you have a diverse group of people in the room, how to actually do it. And I'd love to hear your sort of opinions and thoughts about how society needs to get better and more flexible around the ways that we react and accept different inputs and provide different outputs and such.
Like you touched on it already. Flexibility is huge. For me personally, I get up around 4 a.m. and that is not because I read these lists like, you have to be successful, you have to wake up at 4 a.m. It's because that's just how I wake up. Like, I'm ready to go at 4 a.m. My best ideas come out at 4 a.m. And when you're working at a 9-to-5 job, that doesn't necessarily work for you, because it's like,
I feel you.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And so,
yeah, you and me both were ready for bed by 7 p.m., right?
Correct. And I'm already up, and there have been times where I've had the 9-to-5 job and I get to work an hour earlier, and then I still have to stay there until 5 because those are the rules. And I'm like, but I've been here for an hour before you got here, and I'm sending emails. I have things that are done. Why do I need to sit here and work longer? Why am I doing that? And I think in positions I've been in, there's no listening happening. People want to do things differently, but I wish they understood that everything is not going to be like what you expect it to be. Like, you need to roll with the punches, and you need to be able to figure out what works best for people. If people are telling you that this is what works for me, then maybe figure out how you can meet them fully or even halfway. Like, if it's something that's new, like, yes, it might be awkward for you or someone else, but there has to be some kind of leeway. And I think currently it's very rigid, and that's something that it's not working. So, yeah.
Is work from home helping? We hear a lot about how flexibility, and we can do our own hours and we can do our own thing. But then sometimes it seems to feel like managers just expect you to be reachable from 9-to-5 anyway, so you have to be there. What's your experience? Is it helping? You sounded excited there.
It is absolutely the best thing ever. It's so awesome. The only thing for me that has been a challenge is setting boundaries. And part of being in the social and digital space is that there's this expectation that you are on 24/7. And when you say no, there is this pushback, like, no, this is what you're supposed to be doing if you're working from home. And it's like, no, I don't think that's the case. And I'm telling you, when I'm working, I'm setting hours, I'm respecting myself, and I would hope that someone else could do the same. But I mean, generally speaking, I've not had that issue that many times. But yeah, working from home has been just a game changer. Like, it's been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The stress level has been, even noticed that. My blood pressure has gone down, which I'm like, awesome. So
one of the feedback pieces I get, interestingly, as a fellow 4 a.m.er, is the feedback of, oh, if you're sending me messages and emails at 4:30 in the morning, now you're pressuring me to be online at 4:30 in the morning. And so you don't get to complain when I send you messages at 10 at night. Are you feeling that? Are you struggling with that?
No, because the snooze option on email is like, that's what I use. So if I'm on at 4:35 a.m., like, I set it to, like, for some reason, I always choose 9:03 a.m. because I don't want to, I don't want to seem like I'm, yeah, it's, if at 9 a.m., I'm like, they're not even, like, up yet. They were up, but, like, wait a few minutes. So it's like they're going through, and like, oh.
So in a very real way, snooze and scheduling your emails has almost become an assistive technology for you, so that you can get your work done without impacting your team.
Ooh, me too. I use that too. Slack has a schedule send, and it has been a godsend. Like, ugh.
Yes.
Makes it so much easier because I come up with I'm unlike you guys, I work really late into the night. So I don't do good in the morning. And so I'm up super late, and I will come up with a thought at, like, I don't know, like midnight, and be like, they don't need to know this right now. Schedule sent.
Well, I guess I've learned something I need to get better at today, because I will just send you that message at 4 in the morning.
Sam, you're doing great. Sam, you are doing great. Do what works for you.
Right.
I just do that because I just do it.
Before we get to our next question, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Shane, the platform coordinator at Fable. I'm a full-time screen magnification user, and before becoming the platform coordinator, I started out as a member of our community of accessibility testers. Now I help support Fable's customers as they work with us to best engage people with disabilities in every part of their research, testing, and development. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your accessibility journey. Fable can help you do that, from improving your team's accessibility training with Fable Upskill to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage. We can help you take the next step on your accessibility journey. To learn more, check out our website at makeitfable.com.
Now that we've heard from our sponsor, let's continue the interview.
Well, I'm going to shift us back in, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
What is a problem that you have solved that you are incredibly proud of?
I was in President Obama's first inaugural parade, and I was marching with a group of people. And while we were there, like preparing, we realized that, oh, wait, we need to be able to march in a block. And we hadn't really considered that before that. And so me being the person who was marching band, taught them quickly, like maybe within 30 minutes, how to march in a block, how to dress the line, making sure the lines are straight. And so that is where I just jumped in and was like, hey, I know how to do this, and something fun. So I would say that's one thing. So
that it sounds so much fun just to sort of be there in that moment and doing that. It also sounds like something that is so important in ways that you don't know about, right? Like having the representation and having that happen probably has had effects and ripples down the line that you will never hear about.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's so nice when you can make those little adjustments in life and just feel you have a huge impact. For me, the biggest things that I feel like I have been impacted is like when I organize too. Like I used to be the Pride Parade's assembly manager here in San Francisco.
Okay.
And just getting people to be organized, like in physical space, I felt something so deep inside of me that I don't feel being on a computer. It's really interesting.
Right.
Hey, well, maybe the metaverse will make us feel like all of our creations have been embodied in physical space.
All of the metaverse.
So what do you feel has been your most significant success?
So sobriety. I quit drinking just before the pandemic started, and I'm still not drinking. And so in February, it'll be 2 years. And to do that during a pandemic and just kind of still be doing it, I'm really proud of that. And that's something, it seems small, I don't know, but that is something really significant for me that it's really helped me. And I would say even really understood how much it just made me not like it would make me anxious. And I didn't really understand that until I just cut it out. And I'm like, oh, wow. And it's been a completely different world. And so it's not for everyone, but it works for me. And I feel like it helps me get through like the rough moments and whatnot.
It's funny how problems can sneak up on us, isn't it? Right? Like you don't realize it was a problem until you stop.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Definite.
Yeah. Then, and of course, I mean, there are things that it's okay for us to do in the good times and not okay for us to do in the bad times. And it can be really difficult to realize the difference, right?
Correct. And I think that like cutting out alcohol, it also kind of gave me permission to kind of figure out what else wasn't needed in my life. Because I think we have a tendency to go through life and just kind of go with the flow and just, we don't think about like, hey, does this really serve me anymore? And so for me, additionally, like with alcohol, I also kind of went way back off of social media. And that could be partly because I was involved with for over a decade and having to be on 24/7 or having that thought that I needed to be. And now that I'm not, I've given myself that leeway to say, hey, Steven, you know what? You don't need to be on all hours of the day. Like if it doesn't make you feel good, like you don't have to like sit there and read it. So, yeah.
So for you, it was about reduction and just reducing the excess and the stuff, right? Like, I know I have friends and I've had the experience. Well, I'm gonna stop drinking, or I'm gonna stop whatever vice so that I can replace it with, right? Yep. I want this other thing. But for you, it's all about just reducing in general, it sounds like.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's been awesome. It's just been, I'm able to like figure things out. I'm able to like put things where they should be. And it's not just a water hose of information or whatever. So yeah, it's been awesome.
It is so great. Like, most of the people who are on season one, which is the season you're on right now, are people who have like are deep in technology, you know, or have like this integral interwebbing through technology. And it's refreshing and a totally sort of different thing as someone pulling out of the technology, someone who has been, you know, leading ways in different areas of digital and has been like, okay, well, this isn't working. What are some of the things that you've sort of learned along this path that have really been the things that are like, oh yeah, I realize this isn't working? And
they're completely unrelated probably, but like just random things like getting texts from scammers on my phone. Like, I think everyone is pretty much annoyed by that. And I was like, you know what? Like, what can I do to change that? And I'm like, I just changed my phone number. And so I had my phone number for a number of years and just decided, like, what if I just changed it? So I don't get those anymore, which is awesome. Social media, I started my old Twitter account in 2009. And that was one of the things I was just like, what would happen if I just deleted that old account and started over? And so that's what I did in October. And one thing I didn't realize that I should tell people that I was doing it. So now it's kind of like, people are like, wait, I thought I was following you. And I'm like, I actually just deleted it and started over. And that's
That can be hard. And, yeah. And people can be very judgmental, right?
Yes. It's like, I had no idea. Now I do get it. And if anyone is thinking about doing that, like, come up with a plan before you do it and then do it. But it's, I mean, it really is something that I needed to get done. And I knew that if I felt like if I told people, why are you doing that? Don't do that. And it's like, nope, this is for me. Like, I need to focus on what is good for me and not everyone else.
Yeah. It's like, as soon as you tell someone that you're going to stop drinking, it's like a victory for them if they can get you to have a beer.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah. And that's really uncomfortable because it's like, I don't really want to talk about, like, I mean, sure, I do talk about it. I've been talking about it on a podcast, but it's something where it's like, if you go to a party and it's like, why aren't you drinking? And it's like, what, why are you drinking?
You need to show your special license to have the right to do something.
Right.
I think it's super interesting. It's actually a conversation Sam and I have been having. No. Just around this idea of like whose burden is things. And so I feel like a lot of the times, especially like within disability, if you're disabled, you have to overcome those excess issues. You have to do it, opposed to the other side coming back and meeting you. So like,
So I think that leads so well into another kind of question that we have here, which is around frustration. You've been eliminating and cutting back and taking care of yourself and doing better and getting better. So, but like, what's been, throughout your career in technology, what's been your biggest frustration, and is it still happening, or have you managed to get rid of it as you step back?
That's a good question. I would say it's not even related to a kind of reducing things. I would say in that space, it's been really difficult to find other people who look like me. And so I would say that's kind of been a difficult thing. And I guess, especially with like just racial issues in our country, that it's just been kind of, I wish people would think about how they're communicating, not only because of race, but just everything else. And it's been difficult. And I think that's part of, well, maybe that is why I've just kind of pulled away from things, because it's like, it's so much. And I'm like, okay, how can I get rid of that? How can I get rid of the things that are uncomfortable? And yeah, I don't even know if that answered the question, but.
Yeah, it did. Is there any kind of maybe a sense of like, I've done my time, it's time for someone else, or I can't do this anymore. I can't fight this anymore. And it's not my job anymore, maybe?
Yes. I feel like now that I'm going back into like human services, that's what I should have been doing in the first place, to be honest. Have I learned in the digital social space? Absolutely. And I'm going to use what I've learned to help connect people to the resources that they need so that they can lead fulfilling lives. And so it's, yeah, I'm ready to move on and do something else.
So, I mean, you've really opened yourself for the up for this one then, as you sort of talk about moving on and passing on the torch maybe and what you've learned.
Yep.
To the people who are like you, whether they share your challenges or whether they look like you or whatever it may be, what is the advice that you would give to someone who's just taking their first steps into the tech industry from all the things that you've learned?
That is a really good question. I would say get a mentor if you can find one. They're out there. And I would like to think that if someone needs to talk to someone, like I'm more than willing to like answer questions about like, how did you do this? Or how did you do that? A lot of it is figuring out different ways to do things. Something I've been thinking about recently is career advice. I don't know who it's for. I feel like a lot of things in my career have not been what has been prescribed, and I've had to kind of make things for myself as I go along. And so be open to different experiences, I guess would be one thing. And know what your non-negotiables are. I think I went into or have done things where it's like, I will let anything happen and or anything goes. And it's like, but when you go into something and you can say, this is what I will not do, this is what I will not do, this is what I will accept, just giving yourself permission to live your life and to understand that you are in control of that and don't let anyone else push you around.
I feel like that was career advice for me. Yeah. See that? I want to get back to, because I feel like you might have had something to say, but that question that we were talking about is like other people not stepping up to meet you when we were talking a little bit back. I feel like you had something more to say there.
One thing that's been really helpful is that I'm going to call them, I guess, allies or accomplices. I've had those in my career, and they have fought for me when I felt like I couldn't do it myself. And what I mean is people who speak up, and it's like when they can tell something is wrong, and maybe I'm not in a situation where or in an environment where I can't speak up, not because I don't want to, it's because it's like I'm scared. Like if I speak up, what if I lose my job? And so having those people there and figuring out who they are has been like something that has helped so much. And so those are the people I at every stage in my career, I just look for them who seem like they aren't scared to use their voice or their privilege to talk about or bring attention to the things that may be affecting people who don't have that privilege or that voice. Because oftentimes it's, I want to speak up, but I can't just because of how things are built systemically. And when those people speak up who are just aware, like it is like a relief. And it's just, I wish more people would do it because I don't think they understand how much it helps. And yes, it might feel really uncomfortable for them, but they're making someone else feel comfortable. And I think that's something that people just need to realize. Like, and for anyone that's done that for me and they're listening to this, thank you so much. You know who you are. So, yeah.
Awesome. I think the thing that you brought up and that really excited me that I wanted to get into from both of you, I think there's a understanding these days that good allyship involves good listening. But sometimes good allyship does involve speaking. But how do you know when you are stepping too far out of your lane, when you are crossing the line, when you're removing agency for someone else? As someone who I think has probably had the privilege to have good allies, yeah, for those who want to be allies, for those who want to help out, what tips would you give them about how to go beyond listening and how to be a good ally in speaking?
I think people underestimate how much just listening can be beneficial and not be so quick to offer solutions. Sometimes it's something so simple as saying, you know what, that's really rough, or you know what, I'm thinking about you. it's just little things that I don't know if people need to do so much to be an ally in some cases, but in other cases, yes, it's going to make you uncomfortable. And I think like in a work setting, when you see something happening, like speak up, like if you feel like you're stepping on someone or over someone, like just say, I don't know if this is what you're trying to say, or I don't know if I'm overstepping. I think it's a lot of just asking, like, it's that, how can I show up for you? Do you want me to speak up? Do you want me to do this? Or do you want me to do that? And this situation happened. Was there something I could have done differently that would have been a better way to handle that or to show up for you? And I think, yeah, we're all going to make mistakes. I get that. So like, I get that. But yeah, I don't know how to answer that one. That's a really difficult question.
I think what I'm hearing you say is that like, it's good to keep open lines of communication and for people who want to be allies to listen, but to not only listen, but to ask people who have lived experiences, how can I step up for you? And do you want me to? Right. And what can I do to support you?
Right.
It's really hard. I think Sam has talked about this where people like walk up to you, Sam, and just grab your arm and assume you need help. And
yeah, it happens all the time. And I think what you were saying is very critical too. I think there's an assumption that people with disabilities are the same, right? And maybe just because you would wish that I would speak in a particular situation, Nikki would rather that I did not, right? And that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay for people to be different, or maybe sometimes the other way around.
Right.
But I think the mistake that some allies make, and maybe you agree with this or maybe you don't, is that they have one person who wanted them to speak to a situation and they now assume that everybody does. And
correct.
That's how you should do it all the time, right?
Right. That is absolutely correct. Yep.
I think that's really important in everything, is that everybody is individual, even if you have intersected with someone with a disability that is this like seems the same. When you've met someone with a disability, you've met one person with a disability. You can't make these broad assumptions, and just better lines of communication. I feel like this transitions into a question that I should have asked earlier. What are some myths around disability that you see that you want to bust?
That you shouldn't talk about it is the worst. And I don't know why people are so scared. Like, I want to talk about it. Then it's like, I'm also who is okay to listen and who is not going to judge, whatever. Does that answer the question?
It sounds like you want to bust the myth that it's that disability is a topic that shouldn't be talked about.
Right. Right.
Or that it's something we should be ashamed of in ourselves. Right.
Right.
There is a movement. Do you feel it that almost our identity as people with disabilities is something we should take pride in?
I mean, I don't know. This is like another thing I didn't know was a disability, was depression, and had not realized that that was a disability. And I think we need to talk about that. And I think the pride part, I'm not quite sure about. I don't know. I think it fluctuates between, I mean, it's a case by case basis, maybe. So yeah. I don't know.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's a hard one because I think that we can all be good at fighting ableism by saying there's like disability, the word disability, there's nothing wrong with it. If you perceive any kind of disability as a negative, that is bad. But also we don't have to assume that everyone's like, yay, my chronic illness is I'm so prideful about it. But I do think there needs to be like some form of visibility and just acceptance in the fact that it's not just because you have a disability, it's not a negative. Like,
correct.
There's not, you know,
exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, we as people with disabilities, maybe perhaps need to get better at allowing people to find their pride and their acceptance rather than forcing it on them. I mean, do you remember sort of in the queer community 20 years back, there was that thing going on where like everybody was doing deep studies into famous historical people to like out them?
We have it in disability too. But basically, you know, you go back and you are like, was this person queer or not? Like in their time, wouldn't have been able to. But like people are doing that in the autism community too. Like they're backwards referencing and being like, oh, all these people are autistic. And I think someone, this happened where someone went back and like self-diagnosed a bunch of historical autistic people. And they were all white except for one person. Like we don't understand some of these these things. Yeah. I mean, and also there's this problem with outing people too within disability. It's like, absolutely, not everybody wants to be like, disability is a protected class. We still have ableism issues around it. And not everybody feels comfortable because we don't live in a system where it makes it safe to be a disabled person in our society. So we need to start dismantling all of preaching. I know I'm preaching, sir.
On that dismantling things, I was thinking about career advice and how I get, this was like a few days ago. I was looking at a job description and I'm like, why is this so ableist? Like what is going on? Like, wow. But at the bottom they have we're a diverse workplace. And it's like, are you though? Like, what's going on? Like, it's scary.
We're a diverse workplace just as long as you have a driver's license, just in case we need it. It's not part of your job description, but you have to have a driver's license.
Exactly. Right. You must be able to lift 15 pounds. It's like, why? What?
Those signaling just is like system level evidence that you don't belong. And we really need to dismantle a lot of that stuff. If you work for a company that allows inaccessible technologies to be used in the workplace, like all of those things signal to disabled people, hey, you don't belong here. Those are the little things that people don't realize. I was actually recently on a panel it was a presentation that Sam invited me to, and someone asked, if we're using a technology and nobody at our company is disabled, so they're not having an access issue, should we use that technology? And my response was, we all need to step up and say, no, we are not going to use inaccessible technology, even if it's not impacting us specifically.
Correct.
And that's how I think people can be good allies, is they can start cutting their ties to companies that are inaccessible and fight for and push forward to make sure that we do have accessible technology and accessible services and all that stuff. Anyways, definitely. I'll get off my soapbox. We'd love to end on this. Okay. We're super curious. What was the first piece of technology you remember using and what was it for?
I had a Tandy computer from Radio Shack, and I feel like the discs were like bricks. Like they were massive. That's all I remember. And I remember there being like a really thick programming book that came with it. And you essentially just did the code and it would have like a dot that would move around. And that was it. So wasn't anything major.
Back in the days when we were all equal and typing in programs we found in a magazine.
Yes.
I love how you mentioned multiple times that like the conversation is ongoing and it's something that people should talk about and something that you're happy to talk about. So if people want to carry on that conversation, where are you comfortable with them finding you?
So I'm on Twitter at Stephen Anfield. I have a website that I just kind of revamped. It is an upgrade from my first website, which was on GeoCities. So we have that going. My contact page it's not built yet, but I'm working on that. And I think it mostly is, but either one works for me.
Thank you for being here. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan. Edited and produced by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber. Theme music is created by F.A. Ackman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram @DisabilityBandwidth or on our website at disabilitybandwidth.com.